Bitcoin is using all the energy that a country like Switzerland or Austria is consuming. You have to peel one layer of the onion back and realize that a lot of the energy that Bitcoin is consuming is waste energy that otherwise isn't consumed in the first place. This is the Bitcoin Infinity Podcast,
a show where we take you through the Bitcoin rabbit hole and beyond.
Hope you enjoy the episode. Hello, everyone. Welcome to another episode of Bitcoin Infinity Podcast. My name is Ram.
And I'm Krishna.
In this episode, we want to address the concerns about Bitcoin's energy consumption. It's a never-ending debate. Mainstream media portrays as if Bitcoin is contributing to the climate change. Bitcoin is literally boiling the oceans. So we want to address that.
Even before we start getting into the energy consumption argument on Bitcoin, it's important to understand and establish that Bitcoin provides a neutral and a global monetary network. So which means it stores billions of dollars in value and it's used by at least 50 million people. So it has a genuine utility and that it has valid claim towards utilizing Earth's resources. And this is a very, very key premise.
Correct. Yeah, if we don't acknowledge like Bitcoin is useful, I think that's the end of argument. Like no comparison of Bitcoin's energy and cost is worth discussing. It will be the end of the argument. You can turn off this episode. We can meet in the next episode. But let's establish the key premise that Bitcoin as such has some utility and it has valid claim towards resources like Krishna said. So yeah, let's dive into it. So where do you want to start?
Yeah, I think a good starting point would be to compare Bitcoin's energy consumption with other activities. But before we actually get into that, let's just ask this question. Why does Bitcoin consume energy?
So yeah, if you recall, Bitcoin miners are the maximum users of this energy. Miners, they perform the proof of work algorithm. And what it essentially does is it secures the network. Like if I perform a transaction, I know in a certain amount of time, the transaction is confirmed because miners are helping doing this proof of work algorithm, maintaining the single linear history of the blockchain. So imagine you don't want your blockchain to be forked. We don't want a copy of our transaction. We don't want your bitcoins to disappear. So basically miners help secure the network. And one more thing is like, let's jump into the shoes of Satoshi. Like why did Satoshi have to come up with proof of work in the first place? Satoshi would have had this conundrum as to how would I've invented this monetary network, which could be used globally, and how would I distribute it throughout the world? Like Satoshi could have airdropped it, but then not many people have internet access. Satoshi could have emailed their friends, and but that is not a fair way. Like Satoshi needed to come up with a very fair way to actually distribute the digital asset of this network. So energy seem to be a fair way, like actually showing you've put in work to actually deserve the digital asset. So that's how Satoshi decided to settle on proof of work, where you have to like expend energy to obtain new units of Bitcoin. And like using energy also encourages like free market participants. Like that's how it keeps it fair. Like unlike the Federal Bank, where they have the privilege of printing with the click of a button, miners will have to spend energy and resources to actually mine the asset. So that's why proof of work was chosen in the first place.
And it's also important to understand that he could have not chosen anything else. So there are other, like instead of say proof of work, let's say he chose proof of stake, which means that people who hold more Bitcoins have the ability to have a lot more influence than people who hold less Bitcoins. If he had chosen that, that's basically nothing different from the current monetary system where few people with privilege have the ability to make the decision. So proof of stake doesn't work, and you know all the other kind of proofs there, those are things which are not going to work because proof of work is the only one, like Ram mentioned, is going to involve free market participation, and the best proof of work is the consumption of energy.
Exactly. And yeah, so it's important to remember that proof of work is not a bug. Like energy consumption is not a bug, it's a feature. And one other thing to clarify is you would have seen like these mainstream media saying, hey, Bitcoin consumes this much energy. Bitcoin settles some 300,000 transactions per day. So they just extrapolate saying, hey, this is the this is the energy consumed per transaction. I think that is meaningless. Like I said, the energy is used to secure the network and it doesn't correlate to how much transactions is being done.
Yeah, that's exactly right. If you look at historically and currently, miners have earned more through block rewards than through transaction fees. If you look at the energy consumption of Bitcoin, it's basically a function of this block reward and also the price of Bitcoin. So as the price of Bitcoin increases, it incentivizes more miners to join the network, which automatically means that the energy consumption is going to increase.
And it's very much similar to gold. Like for gold, like vast amount of energy is actually expended to extract and refine gold as such. And it's less to do with actually moving gold in trucks. So that's about why Bitcoin consumes energy in the first place. And now let's take like sort of an objective approach as how much this energy consumption compares to like the global energy consumption.
So if we look at the numbers, so let's again start with the simplest number. So the total or the global energy consumption is around 170,000 terawatt hour. Bitcoin uses 0.04% of this total energy. Like you can see how minute or minuscule that is. And to put it in another angle, almost 40 to 50% of the global energy produced is actually wasted. And Bitcoin uses only 0.1% of the total wasted energy. So again, just putting it into number, Bitcoin uses currently around 60 terawatt hour. And now that we've established this number, it's important to compare it with other activities. So let's just go about these things. So first, let's say the online ads, in which most of them are spam, that consumes the same amount of energy as Bitcoin.
That's crazy. Yeah.
Yeah. And okay, let's now go to more essential activities which actually impact our life, like, you know, using a washing machine or a dryer. That actually consumes almost 1.6 times the energy that Bitcoin consumes. So then if we look at actually gold mining and, you know, gold production, etc., that consumes almost 3.5 times the energy consumed by Bitcoin. Then banks and ATMs, they consume 4.7 times. Then the US military, which is, you know, of course, they have a lot of jets and ships, etc. They consume almost 7 times of Bitcoin's energy. Again, we can keep listing, and you know, the next one that we want to list is the domestic refrigeration, which is of course another essential thing, improves our quality of life, that uses up almost 10 times. And then comes another more interesting statistics where, you know, all the always on devices that we use at home, like, you know, Alexa, and, you know, even for your MacBooks that, you know, you just don't want to power it off. You just want to put it to sleep, because when you switch it on, you don't want to, you know, waste 2 seconds in powering it on.
Yeah.
Because people do that, they think this is just harmless, right? But these activities, they consume almost 12 times the amount of energy that Bitcoin does. So that's crazy. So we can keep listing, you know, we can compare more things, but
another thing I've heard is about like the Christmas lights in US.
Yeah, that's another thing, that they consume as much energy as Bitcoin. But we don't have any, you know, moral policing asking us to reduce these things, right? I mean, people do it because people want to. They think it's a reasonable use of energy. And we don't regret the energy use of you know, washing machine or dryer. We are not drying our clothes under the sun because we believe that it's not an efficient use of our time. We use washing machine dryers because we believe it's improving our quality of life, makes our life better. So let's take an example, right? I mean, there's a grocery store that's 2 miles from my house, and I could easily walk to it. You know, it hardly takes me 30 minutes, but I would rather use my car. I would rather drive there. So which means I'm using fuel, which is essentially energy, because I believe that's walking there is not a quality use of my time. So what this shows is the perceived merit of an application's energy consumption is basically one's subjective view of that application's utility. So it's just my choice because I believe that it makes my life better. So now that we've compared Bitcoin's energy use to a lot of other activities, we believe it's also important to compare Bitcoin's energy use with that of the US dollar. I mean, Bitcoin is a global monetary network or a global monetary system, and it directly rivals the US dollar. If you look at mainstream media, they like to compare Bitcoin's energy usage with the likes of Visa. But Visa is essentially a fintech that's sitting on top of the banking system, which is nothing but the US dollar. So if you are comparing Bitcoin's energy use, then you'll also have to compare the energy use of the banking system and mainly the US dollar. So you have to compare the entire stack to have a fair comparison between the Bitcoin network and the US dollar.
So yeah, people think US dollar doesn't have any energy repercussions. Like people think like dollar is just printed and it doesn't have any consequence in terms of energy. But it's important to like dive deep into how much energy is consumed to protect the integrity of US dollar. So similar to how energy secures the Bitcoin network, what actually secures the US dollar system is actually, spoiler alert, is the US military. It's popularly known as the petrodollar system. So in order to understand the petrodollar system, we need to visit some historical events. If you recall, the world was in was using the gold standard. Then there was this Bretton Woods standard wherein like it was US dollar pegged to gold. And 1971 Nixon shock happened where Nixon closed the gold window. And after 1971, it's actually called the Treasury bill standard. So what actually happened was like after Nixon's shock, basically US dollar was inflating, dollar was starting to collapse slowly, like dollar was losing its grip. This was like the birth of fiat standard, by the way. And around 1972-73, US actually supported Israel in the Israeli-Arab war. It was known as the Yom Kippur War. What happened was as a response, Arab nations, they announced an embargo on US. Basically, they won't trade with US and they jacked up the oil price by like 4 times. So basically, US was left to dry out on oil and dollar started plummeting, like 20% decline. It also created like enormous cash flow to the oil nations. And they honestly didn't know what to do with that much money. They were increased the price of oil and they had this huge surplus of money and they didn't know what to do with it. So in 1974, under the Nixon administration, Henry Kissinger, who was the Secretary of State at that time, and William Simon, who was the Treasury Secretary, they were desperate to save the floundering dollar and they want to prolong the dollar hegemony. So that's when petrodollar was born. Like they came up with this incredible idea of like they got Saudi Arabia, who was like the massive majority producer of oil. They got Saudi to agree on a deal where US would provide weapons and security to Saudi Arabia. They would protect their oil refineries, all the oil rigs. And in return, Saudi Arabia will have to price the oil in US dollar. And any country who's trading oil with Saudi will have to buy in US dollar. For example, if France and Saudi are trading oil, they will have to buy in US dollar. And what Saudi Arabia had to do was they also had to, like with the excess US dollar, they had to buy US debt. So basically like treasury bills, and US sort of gave like deals on these treasury bills. So this is the gist of petrodollar system. People call it petrodollar recycling because it's basically taking the US dollar, you're like you're printing the US dollar and you're putting it back in US through this petrodollar system. So US had this massive privilege wherein they are able to have this deficit, finance wars, like they went to war with Vietnam and they financed it through printing. Like they were able to do it without actually devaluing the currency. And it is because they created this artificial demand or this deal with Saudi Arabia. So normally when a country has a massive debt, they're printing money, the currency will start valuing less. And then naturally products produced in the US should be cheaper and people will start buying from the US. So US should be a natural exporter. And this usually sort of balances out, but that didn't happen. US was exporting US dollar to other countries, literally. The artificial demand kept the strength of dollar and it sort of encouraged consumerism in the US and the lack of manufacturing jobs in the US. So that's where you see blue collar jobs started to decline after the fiat standard came into place. So this actually is the main reason for inequality. I don't want to dive deep into it, but yeah, it's important to remember that like US won over other countries by literally printing, like including the Soviets, because US could just print oil while Soviets had to dig it out of the ground. So petrodollar was essential to like US supremacy after 1971. And one another thing to note was like US has aggressively defended the petrodollar system. Like in 2000, Saddam Hussein in Iraq wanted to sell oil in euro, which was called like petro euro. And in 2002, he actually did. And US saw this as a threat, like petro euro was an actual threat for petrodollar. So what US did was, with the help of Britain, they invaded Iraq in 2003 in the name of weapons of mass destruction. Or like, we all agree Saddam was a bad dictator, but then we all know they didn't find any reasons to actually invade Iraq. US actually invaded Iraq in 2003 March, and in 2003 June, Iraq was back to selling oil in US dollar. So that's one example. Another example is what happened to Gaddafi. So Gaddafi didn't sell in euros, but Gaddafi wanted to sell oil in gold. So it was called petro gold. And we all saw what happened to Gaddafi. Like, he was assassinated with the help of the militia inside and the drone strikes. He was killed. And US also did something similar to Venezuela. Like Chavez in Venezuela wanted to deal with gold and not US dollar anymore. US unsuccessfully launched a coup. Even right now, like, Iran is selling oil to India, not in US dollar. And US is clearly not happy with Iran. What I want to say is, like, it's very clear, very evident that US goes to war to protect the US dollar. And we all know that, like, they didn't go to war in search of, like, weapons of mass destruction or anything. Like, US didn't want oil from Saudi Arabia also. Like, US was self-sufficient in terms of oil. Like, US was buying oil from Mexico, Venezuela, and US had some oil in Texas and maybe Alaska. So, yeah, so the dollar is retaining its power because US is able to send its military forces to actually protect it. So that is the hidden cost of US dollar. It's actually the army and the weapons. And it's still happening to this day. So yeah, both Bitcoin and US dollar are powered by energy. One of them is using and burning hydrocarbons. Like, US military, they burn 4.8 billion gallons of fuel per year. Bitcoin, on the other hand, it can take any source of energy. So that's what I wanted to establish. Like, there is some hidden cost to US dollar, and it's definitely not clean. Whatever military is consuming is definitely not environmental friendly. Alex Gladstein has an extensive article on uncovering the hidden cost of petrodollar. I think even Lynn Alden has an article on this. We'll link them in the show notes, so do check them out. So again, to recap, US dollar is literally powered by hydrocarbons. Bitcoin, in contrast, is powered by any energy source. So the question actually comes to, can this energy source be clean? Can this energy source be green?
So the simplest answer is, Bitcoin mining is as green as its energy input. But in contrast, gold mining can never be green because it involves, you know, physically digging out the gold from the earth, you know, clearing out a lot of land, you know, sometimes clearing out a lot of forest. So which automatically means that, you know, gold mining cannot be green. And if you actually recall, Bitcoin miners are like marginal producers. 50% of their revenue goes in electricity, which naturally means they are incentivized to find the cheapest form of electricity. So if you actually look at the cost of the different forms of electricity, renewables like solar and wind, the global average is around 4 to 5 cents per kilowatt hour in comparison to coal, which averages around 12 cents per kilowatt hour. And even now, if you look at the energy distribution of Bitcoin, almost 39% of the energy comes from renewable sources. So Bitcoin has hardly been there for, you know, 10 to 12 years. And you already see there is a huge percentage of its energy from renewable. And it's only going to get more and more in the future.
Like, if technology improves and solar becomes cheaper and when everything becomes cheaper, and it's going to get cheaper, Bitcoin miners will naturally tend towards cheapest form of energy. If solar gets cheaper, Bitcoin mining will go towards solar.
Exactly.
That's an example. Yeah,
that's exactly true. And the other thing to look for is, Bitcoin mining actually incentivizes the use of renewable energy. The easiest way to explain this is to explain the chicken and egg problem with remote energy sources. Let's say I have a renewable energy source, but it's quite far away from civilization. I need to spend a lot of money in basically setting up the grid, etc. And only if I establish that, I'm going to find a civilization that's going to move towards the grid. This is literally a supply-demand issue. Only if there is a supply of that particular electricity, am I going to have a civilization? But without the civilization, there is no incentive for me to produce or give this energy supply. So Bitcoin mining literally solves this. So instead of having that civilization, I can have Bitcoin mining set up there, which will use this electricity from the renewable energy source. And in the meantime, the civilization can get established and everything. So for example, let's say I have a remote source of renewable energy somewhere in Alaska. This energy can actually be tapped without the need for establishing a civilization or, you know, setting up an entire grid just for this need. So that's one thing. And even as another example, China has a lot of abundance in hydroelectric, and most of the miners naturally went towards that. This is also another example where Bitcoin incentivizes renewable energy.
Another great example that I read recently was the flare gas mining. So if you've noticed in these oil rigs and oil wells on top of the tower, you would see these flare gases. This is mainly because the oil production, it has this byproduct, which is methane. And it's been it's not been economical to tap that as an energy source and even distribute. So what they just do is they just burn it. Like instead of letting methane, which is like a heavy greenhouse gas, like they just burn it. So what Bitcoin miners saw was they saw this as a potential. They went to these oil companies and they said, hey, instead of letting out flare gas, why don't you use that to have that as an energy source for Bitcoin mining? And Bitcoin doesn't care where the energy source comes from. It's agnostic of location. So, and it's extremely portable and it's extremely quick to wind up and quick to wind down. So all it needs is like a container of a mining rig, and it's portable, and you can just ship that to this oil fields, and instead of letting that methane gas out in the air and or just burning it, you can use that for Bitcoin mining.
That's true, because this is happening a lot right now in a couple of states in the US, like mainly Wyoming and Montana.
I think even Texas.
Okay, that's great.
One more thing I wanted to bring was, like, you get the idea, like Bitcoin mining rigs are easy to spin up and quick to wind down. So they can sort of represent loads that are interruptible. For example, if you remember, Texas had this power shortage due to weather reasons and stuff. It's mainly because the energy sources, there was just quick demand for electricity, but then the electricity companies, they weren't able to create the supply for the demand. So what Bitcoin mining can do this is it helps these power generation companies to always have this high output, and whenever there's an excess in energy, they can feed it to the Bitcoin miner, and whenever there's increase in domestic demand, they can just wind down the mining rigs instantly and then feed it to the grid. So Bitcoin mining sort of helps in keeping the grid robust. There will be less power outages and stuff. So the possibilities are endless. Like these are just one or two use cases. We are yet to explore more out of this. So to answer the common critique about Bitcoin's energy consumption, we can see that it is a misnomer that Bitcoin is using all the energy that a country like Switzerland or Austria is consuming. While technically it is true, but that's not the real story, right? You have to peel one layer of the onion back and realize that a lot of the energy that Bitcoin is consuming is waste energy that otherwise isn't consumed in the first place.
So before we close out, we want to take an evolutionary approach to energy consumption. So there is something called the Kardashev scale, which is a method of measuring a civilization's level of technological advancement based on the amount of energy it is able to use. So there is type 1 civilization, which can use and store all the energy available on its planet. There is type 2 civilization, which can use and control the energy at the scale of its solar system. Then there is type 3 civilization, which can control energy at the scale of its galaxy. We are actually barely able to consume all the energy from our sun. So we are hardly on the scale around 0.72. And it will take us even maybe 200 more years to reach the type 1 civilization. But why would Kardashev have chosen a civilization's ability to harness energy as a measurement of its advancement? Because energy is the means by which humans have evolved as species. In the beginning, Earth was hostile and inhospitable, but we were able to harness energy, like use fire to cook and eat. We harnessed animals, putting their energy to work in carrying, in milling, in farming. So over the years, humans have evolved. And today, a single person in the US enjoys the privilege of 600 humans working for them. So think in terms of transport system, reliable hospital, easy access to goods and materials, all this grounded in energy expenditure, making life secure, safe, easier and better. Both machines and nature produce work through the utilization of energy. So we have an economy which is basically based not on money, but on work and energy. So all things in our life are closely linked to the price of energy. So purifying water requires energy, transporting products requires energy, and even manufacturing products requires energy. And in a free market, the cost of any good largely reflects the energy used in producing the good. Because free market encourages, you know, the lowest priced products, the energy used in producing any product is, you know, usually minimized. Money, which is just the, you know, a representation of the work required to generate goods and services, can just be viewed as a stored energy.
So, yeah, like you can look Bitcoin as stored energy. So, for example, when Krishna says like money is basically stored energy, like back in 20th century, Henry Ford and even Edison, they were interested in replacing the gold or the dollar with a concept called the energy dollar. Basically, units of energy as a commodity or energy, something like energy currency. The concept was popular because of its sound money characteristics, because you cannot create out of thin air. You need energy and you can't create energy out of thin air. And it had some money properties, but then the idea didn't take off, mainly because it could not be stored easily or transmitted back then. But right now, this is exactly what Bitcoin is. Bitcoin is stored energy. It is actually a super commodity minted from energy, and it's the fundamental commodity of the universe. So if Bitcoin energy consumption keeps increasing, it's only a sign of us humans advancing as species. So yeah, that's about the energy debate. We'd like to conclude by saying, like, this conversation, the fundamentals of the energy consumption, it basically boils down to people who think whether Bitcoin is useful versus people who think that it's not useful. And if you think it's useful, if you appreciate that a sound money that is incorruptible is useful, its energy consumption currently is almost nothing. And on the contrary, I think its consumption is too low. I can honestly sleep peacefully only when I know that Bitcoin consumes as much energy as a country like US, and that no one can touch it. That's when we'll be at peace. Hey, if you've made it this far, thanks for listening in. If you enjoyed the conversation, be sure to subscribe to the show. You can also send us your feedback to hello@bitcoininfinitypodcast.com or visit our website, bitcoininfinitypodcast.com. We're also on Twitter at Bitcoin8Podcast. That is BITCOIN number 8 podcast. As always, this show is meant for educational purposes only and is not financial advice.